Welcome to the J-Files. For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear all the tracks in full, head to the J-Files on doublej.net.au and click on the playlist.
Ham on rye, please. No avocado. Thank you.
No avocado.
Yeah, thanks. Tape ID, 21st of May, 2015. This is the Morrissey J-File with Richie Kingsmill. End of ID.
The J-Files.
Coming from the street.
The J-Files.
Yeah, it's still a great album.
A wonderful accident, really.
The J-Files on Double J.
It was really happening for the first time, and there was lots of excitement that hadn't existed before.
I would go out tonight, but I haven't got the stitch to live a double-decker bus.
And Richard Kingsmill with you on the J-Files on Double J. It's so great to be with you. And tonight, I've got my work cut out for me because I'm going to, in 2 hours, try to cram in as much Morrissey as I possibly can. It's a difficult task because when you think about all the groundbreaking work he did with the Smiths, plus the fact that he's put out 10 solo albums, there's not much time to sort of cover all the bases of what this guy has done. Over 4 decades of music making. It's really great timing to do a J-Files on Stephen Patrick Morrissey. Not only is he back in the country next week for some performances at Vivid Live at the Sydney Opera House, tomorrow, did you know, it's going to be his birthday. He turns 56 tomorrow, so this is perfect timing to celebrate the music of Morrissey. So the guy is unlike any other. He really documents the human condition unlike any other songwriter. He can be bleak. We know Morrissey can be a bit of a downer, but he's so passionate and he's also incredibly funny at the same time. He is one of a kind. Love him or loathe him, he's a remarkable lyricist and a singer. He's an icon for the maladjusted and he's bloody-minded in his views on life. He's also still hugely influential on so many acts coming through today. So let's get into it. This, I think, is a good place to start. Certainly one of his most popular tunes. This is Every Day Is Like Sunday on Double J.
Double J.
You're listening to The J-Files.
Were school days a horror story? Would that be the right way of putting it? I mean, I've got the impression from things I've read that perhaps you and school didn't quite intertwine in the way they could have done.
No, we never did. I don't know what to say on this point, but except, yes, I suppose it really was a horror story. I tried to avoid it as much as possible. But on the days that I was forced to go in, I can't remember any pleasurable experiences whatsoever.
You spent a great deal of time on your own, didn't you, really? I mean, you seemed, or seemed to me, to have been somebody who, by force of circumstances, had to enjoy your own company.
Yes, which was quite enjoyable sometimes. It's quite productive of you, especially because I realised at an early age that I did want to do what I'm doing now. And therefore, by being quite secluded and thinking and planning, it proved to be a very productive period of self-development. And so, in an absolutely perverse way, I almost quite appreciate the kind of isolation that I went through. It's proved ultimately to be quite a weapon, almost.
Could you put your hand on your heart and tell me that years ago you could actually see yourself in the position that you're in now, being interviewed on the radio?
Absolutely, yes.
The J-Files.
And that track, going back to 1985, The Smiths with The Headmaster Ritual, still has one of my favourite Morrissey lines of all time. Belligerent ghouls run Manchester schools, spineless swines, cemented minds. You got to remember when that track came out and when that album, Meter's Murder, was released in 1985, I look back just to remind myself, you know, the things that were top of the charts in that year were things like Wham, A-ha, and Foreigner. There were very few acts who were producing music that had that sense of depth, that lyrical depth, compared to the Smiths. They really were such a breath of fresh air and such an important band at the time. Richard Kingsmore with you on Double J tonight. This is the Morrissey J-Files. We'd love you to get as involved in the program tonight as much as possible. We're going to have a bit of a theme tonight of your favourite Morrissey lyric or quote. And we've got Cody first up in Adelaide who's joined us tonight. Cody, you got involved. First of all, you rate yourself as a Morrissey fan. How big?
Probably, I'd say 16 out of 10.
16 out of 10. That's pretty good going. Yes. What was the turning point for you? What was the thing that turned you on to Morrissey and his music?
Well, it was actually when he toured in 2002. I'd been interested in the Smiths and a friend actually bought me a ticket to go see him. And I was smitten.
And I saw him for the first time on stage during that tour as well. What do you remember all those years on, 13 years on, what do you remember of him on stage?
I just remember the voice mainly, sort of hitting me right in the chest and, you know, he's very pompous and just very grand and
such a presence.
Exactly. But no, the voice mainly is what sort of just knocked me off my feet.
Absolutely. Tell me about a lyric. Any lyrics stick out for you amongst all the ones he's written?
Oh, there's so many. How do you choose one? I like that he's still doing it now. So I guess something more recent. Dear God, please help me off Ringleader of the Tormentors. There are explosive kegs between my legs. I quite like the imagery of that.
It's so out there, isn't it? It's remarkable. I was thinking, given how many songs he's written, and he still finds ways of talking about stuff that we encounter in day-to-day life. It's just remarkable. He still draws energy and he still comes up with great analogies. Anyway,
yeah,
we've got to...
Yeah, it has a beautiful way of articulating it.
Absolutely. Cody, we've got to move on. We've got so much to get through in the next couple of hours on the J-Files. Thanks so much for phoning in and getting involved.
Excellent. Thanks, Richard.
All right. See you, Cody. All right. I know a lot of people around the country aren't going to be able to see Morrissey on stage because he's only doing Sydney next week. So there's going to be some live tracks filtered into tonight's J-Files, including this, dating back to 1992.
Double J. Hear it on your mobile, online, on your digital radio or TV.
J-Files tonight as we look at the work of Morrissey. Richard Kingsmore with you, and that track, Irish Blood, English Heart, from his album You Are The Quarry, came out in 2004, fairly influential and also important album in his career in that he bounced back after 7 years. Of course, he went through that horrible court case as well with Mike Joyce, the former drummer from The Smiths, but he bounced back with a really great record in You Are The Quarry. And before that, you heard a live version of Glamorous Glue, live on Saturday Night Live in the States back in 1992, which was also an important year for the was, in that he finally got a stable band. He got Boz Borah on board and also Elaine White, who have played with him pretty much ever since then. Just back to that track, though, that you just heard, Irish Blood, English Heart. Of course, his parents were Irish Catholics who moved out from Dublin, and then Morrissey was born in 1959, just outside of Manchester. We're going to cover a little bit more of his Irish roots later on tonight, but his parents were incredibly important to him and influential in who he became. His dad was a hospital porter, his mum a librarian. He was actually really good at sports at school, which a lot of people do find surprising, but he could hold his own on the sporting field. He was a good athlete. He was into soccer, but he just loved music a lot more. At a very early age, he got turned on to pop singers like Melanie Safka and also Sandy Shaw. When he got a little bit older, the New York Dolls were incredibly important to him, and then after that, bands like the Cramps. He was just before, looking at forming the Smiths, he was in a very short-lived punk band as well called the Nosebleeds, which had Billy Duffy in the band as well, and he went on to great success with the Cult many years later. We're going to look back at Morrissey's early days, what sort of person he was and how he became the person that he is today in just a moment tonight on the J-Files. But let's hear this. This is a great track from his album of last year.
Off the tongue, the vicious street gang slang. I lean into a box of pine, identify the kid as mine.
That, I reckon, is probably the highlight from his album of last year, World Peace is None of Your Business. That's Morrissey and the song called Istanbul, tonight on the Morrissey J-Files on Double J. Richard Kingsmore with you. Just a little bit about that record. They actually recorded that record in France. He worked with American producer Joe Ciccarelli, who's done some big records with the Strokes and the White Stripes, but he's also done some Australian records too, with the likes of Boy and Bear and Augie March. It was 5 years in between albums, too, for Morrissey. But in that time, he wasn't out of the limelight that much because his very sensational autobiography came out in 2013. But now I reckon it's time to look back at the early days of Morrissey ourselves. And the story begins in Manchester, the home of Coronation Street, the legendary Hacienda nightclub, and a footy team who's won their fair share of FA Cup finals. This cold industrial heartland in England's north has also given birth to some incredibly exciting music.
In 1977, the spotlight of punk may have shone brightly in London on the Sex Pistols, but the Buzzcocks, the Fall and Joy Division soon shifted the focus north.
It's a thing that's worth having, yes I would.
10 years later, we were swamped with all those wonderfully baggy bands that renamed the city Madchester. But in between came a band that changed the face of music. A band so unique and so talented that few could rival in the 80s. A band led by a very literate singer who simply went by his surname. A band with a guitarist described at the time as the last of the guitar heroes. And a band that released 6 top 10 albums in the UK in their short life of 5 years. That band was the Smiths. You could see the force that the Smiths were about to become when they got together in 1982. Not even Tony Wilson, who ran Manchester's most happening record label, Factory Records.
I think he rang me up in about 1980, and he said, I've decided I want to put together a pop group and be a pop star, Tom. And I had great difficulty not laughing in his face, I have to confess that, because the most least likely person to be a pop star, I can't imagine anyone less likely.
Coming from the background that I did, it really seemed that the only way off the old council estate was to go into popular music or through sport some way. Otherwise, you're just nailed to the factory or unemployment or something quite spiritless. So for me to have these very largely inflated ideas about doing something which is largely considered an almost quite rightly so, quite glamorous, was, you know, just a total illness, and people laughed at me and spat at me. But I had immense determination, and it seemed that the more people tried to hammer me down and say that I was dreaming, the more angry I got and the more determined I was. I remember at one point, just as I was leaving school, I had to see the careers officer, and he said, "What do you want to do when you leave school?" And I told him that I wanted to make records and I wanted to sing and write, and he virtually beat me up almost, and I ended up leaving with leaflets for the civil service.
Morrissey's ambitions to become a pop star weren't fulfilled straight away. In fact, after several years, it became clear that he wasn't going to make it on his own. It took a young local guitarist called Johnny Marr to kickstart the Smiths. Marr got the nerve to approach Morrissey after watching an interview with the legendary 60s songwriting team of Lieber and Stoller. Their story of getting together became the Smiths' story too.
One of them, I can't remember which, said he just got to the point where he knew who the other guy was and they hadn't met, and he thought, well, if we're ever going to get together, I'll just go over there and knock on his door and say, you know, let's get together and write songs, which sounded very, very idealistic, but it caught my imagination. So that's what I did.
He just appeared at the door one day. It sounds really fanciful, but that's exactly how it happened.
Manchester's a small place, and Morrissey was known as this sort of fanatical letter writer and known to love the New York Dolls. He knew what he liked.
Johnny Rogan, author of Morrissey and Marr, The Severed Alliance.
Johnny Marr is a good salesman. I don't think he had to sell himself very much to Morrissey, but, you know, if he'd had to, he certainly could have done.
I was taking quite a chance because I was very, very fashion conscious and had a very strong image. I wasn't quite sure about what he was going to look like or what he was into at all, and walked in his house and he was really taken aback, and so he invited me in. First thing I saw was this huge cardboard James Dean crucifix thing, so I thought, well, that's not too bad, I'm on a winner here. And he brought me into his room, and there were all these great pictures of James Dean and a couple of Elvis pictures and stuff, and immediately it became obvious that we had a hell of a lot in common as regards our feelings towards pop culture.
Imagine it, he's got this kid knocking on the door who's only 19 years of age. He's done all these wild and wacky and marvellous things, and at the same time he's also writing these marvellous melodies, and, you know, he's a great guitarist as well, and, you know, the partnership is perfect.
The J-Files.
The first song the two composed together was Suffer Little Children, which ended up closing the Smiths' self-titled debut album, released in February of 1984.
It gave me a whole series of songs, batches of words, and just to see them on paper, I've literally never seen anything like it, because it was the content was so serious, but at the same time, very, very poignant and poetic. And I just looked at them, and straight away I worked out the kind of the music that these images evoked.
Take me to the moor, dig a shallow grave, and I'll lay me down over the moor. Take me to the moor, dig a shallow grave, and I'll lay me down.
The song by which the Smiths first became known in Australia was their second single, This Charming Man.
When we recorded This Charming Man, we had only had it for 2 weeks. We had just written the song, and we all felt a particular energy about the song. Just this very strange urgency to have it released straight away.
What sort of working relationship does the band have? Is it you and Johnny getting together, or is it a very collaborative sort of...
It isn't collaborative, really. In the writing sense, it's just Johnny and I. I could never, ever sing anybody else's words, and Johnny could never play anybody else's music.
British female singers of the 60s were a big influence on Morrissey. His favourites included Marianne Faithfull, Dusty Springfield and Sandy Shaw, who the Smiths actually got to re-record their first single, Hand in Glove.
Already we've had so much media attention that in a way, I mean, it really almost seems like a hit record before it's even released.
By all the Smiths except Morrissey, Sandy Shaw sang Hand in Glove on the influential BBC TV show Top of the Pops. Dressed in leather, she writhed across the floor in mock imitation of Morrissey. In the background, the Smiths mimicked Shaw's 60s moves and her trademark of going barefoot. Another of Morrissey's major heroes, and a tremendous influence on his writing, was Oscar Wilde.
I have to mention that it was my mother who pumped me with Oscar Wilde, and she really steered me in most of the directions that were later to become valuable for me. She thrust it into me at a very early age. That sounds almost violent. And it remained there.
The J-Files.
It was always quite important to me to feel that once I began to sing that I shouldn't really imitate anybody, which I think is the mistake that many new singers do tend to make. You can spot their influences from, you know, yards away. So it was really quite important to me just to sing completely naturally, even if sometimes it means I sing flat. I don't mind that, as long as it sounds natural and quite urgent and quite genuine.
The Smiths were also extremely idealistic when it came to doing gigs.
We could have done pub circuits and lower club circuits, but I feel that once you get onto that treadmill, you're almost there forever, and people begin to associate you with the pub circuit, which to me isn't, you know, a proud badge to wear. So it was really very important to us just to play very important venues at important times, worthwhile appearances. And so they were very select, but they were always successful.
Not only were the Smiths driven by their own ideals, they were also responding to the rather sterile musical climate of the mid-80s.
We've got all these synthesizer duos with 18-syllable names. We just turned the whole thing around and we called ourselves the Smiths.
Indeed they did, and what an impact they had on modern music. Johnny Marr there right at the end talking about the Smiths' early days. And there you have it, the formative years of Morrissey, where he came from and how he developed as a wonderful songwriter and also performer on the J-Files tonight on Double J. Of course, it was by 1987 that everything went terribly, terribly wrong for the Smiths. Johnny Marr and Morrissey fell apart. Basically, Johnny Marr just didn't want to be in the group anymore. He was carrying the weight of management, as well as, I guess, sharing the spotlight with Morrissey. And I think maybe the band just had too many egos in it at that point. But we didn't have to wait very long for Morrissey to kickstart his solo career. It was, in fact, only 6 months after the final Smiths release that we got this.
This is the voice of Kate Miller-Heidke. I love this song. It's by Morrissey, and it deals with the theme of regret. I remember reading an article recently about the difference between regret and remorse. Remorse being remorseful about something that you've actually done, and regret being thinking back on lost opportunities. So I guess the message there is just go and do it. Here's Morrissey with his beautiful song, The Never Played Symphonies.
Reflecting from my deathbed, I'm balancing life's riches against the ditches and the flat grey years in between. All I can see are the never laid, that's the never played symphony. Can't see those who tried to love me.
The J-Files.
I just read everything, but I don't necessarily read everything thoroughly. I buy about 20 books a week, and I just browse through them and throw them away.
Oh, my love.
On Double J tonight. Getting you in the mood, whetting your appetite if you're going to go and see Moz on stage next week. He's back in the country doing Vivid Live. that's the reaction he's going to get next week, I'm sure, at the Sydney Opera House. There you have it. Morrissey live on stage way back in 1992 with a great version there of November Spawned a Monster. Thanks to everyone who's been getting in touch with us either via the text line or on the Facebook page at Double J. Thanks to Matt in Brisbane, who's loving the show tonight. Tash in Adelaide reckons that Asleep is her favourite song of all time. Our favourite lyric, Sing Me to Sleep, from that track is actually tattooed on her chest. Wow, Tash, you are a fan. And also, Kate got in touch to say that her favourite lyric of Morrissey's is, "Last night I dreamt that somebody loved me. No hope, no harm, just another false alarm." It's really hard to quote Morrissey's lyrics and do them justice because that voice has got to deliver them sometimes as well. So hopefully I didn't disappoint you with that quotation of Morrissey's. Pete's also a major fan. Pete from Melbourne joins me right now. Your brother actually introduced you to Morrissey, did he?
Yeah, about 25 years ago. I would have only been 10.
And, wow.
I got right into his lyrics straight away and could remember them. They just made a mark.
Can you remember the first song he played you?
It was "The Queen Is Dead."
Ah, it's "The Queen Is Dead." Well, you actually got in touch to say that that's got your favourite lyric. Can you remember it?
It's got one of the favourite. As the guy from Adelaide said, there are way too many. But it's about him saying that he broke into the palace and the queen saying, "Hey, I know you and you cannot sing." He said, "I said, that's nothing. You should hear me play piano." And that's just a good joke on his odd voice, I suppose. But as you say, it's really powerful.
Absolutely. As a 10-year-old, hearing the music of Morrissey as well, and it was an immediate reaction, what went with it? I mean, you're 10. Some of these lyrics maybe could have gone over your head. What was it that connected you?
They did, but as you know, Johnny Marr and Smiths, it was catchy and it was funky and different. And he also played me "The Other," which had a bit of Johnny Marr.
Yeah, well, that's
so
one of
just a nice, different music.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that it is. We're celebrating it tonight with Morrissey about to return to Australia. We're doing the Morrissey J Files. Thanks, Pete, so much for getting in touch with us. Keep enjoying, okay?
Thanks, it's an awesome show.
Okay, thanks a lot. Of course, we said at the beginning of the program that the influence of Morrissey's songs just keeps on keeping on. The influence and the importance of the words he's created and the music he's made through all this time is so important. See how many of these very famous acts covering Morrissey's songs you can spot.
And if a double-decker bus kills the both of us, such a heavenly way to die. I know it's over, it never really began, but in my heart it was so real. The boy with a phone in his side, behind the hatred there lies a murderous desire.
Take me on tonight. With my heart on a string, dear God, please help me.
Just a skulls, spineless swine, cemented minds.
Driving in your car, I never want to go home, because I haven't got one anymore.
So there you have it. That's really just scratching the surface. Just some of the people who have covered Morrissey's songs over the years. Mark Ronson right there at the end. We'll go from the top down. You heard Neil Finn, Jeff Buckley, Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr., Twin Shadow, Death Cab for Cutie, Marianne Faithfull, David Bowie, Radiohead, The Dum Dum Girls and Placebo in there, all doing their best renditions of songs which Morrissey has had a hand in writing. Pretty awesome stuff. If you want to get in touch with us tonight on Double J on the J Files, text in 0408 345555. I've got to hear the original. I've just gotta. Still gives me tingles, this one. From the final Smiths record on Double J.
Absolutely never get sick of drinking tea. It's a psychological thing, really. It's just very composing and it makes me relax. I'm very avid. I have to have at least 4 pots a day. It's very important that you heat the pot before you put the water in. If you use a pot, I mean, I know most people here just throw a tea bag into a cup. But in England, of course, you have to make a pot of tea. And you have to heat the pot first with hot water and then put the tea bags in. I can't believe I'm saying this.
The Morrissey J Files.
And then put the hot water in the tea bags and then just throw it all over yourself and rush to outpatients and write a really good song.
The J Files. Join in on Facebook and Twitter.
On Double J tonight on the Morrissey J Files. That was the last album actually to feature the lead guitarist, Elaine White, who had played with Morrissey for many, many years. That was actually a co-write between Morrissey and Elaine. That one was called Something Is Squeezing My Skull. It comes from the 2009 album, Years of Refusal, and of course the Smiths before that with Stop Me, which still to this day Morrissey includes in most of his set lists when he travels around the world. We're going to get back to the music of the Smiths in a little while, but not by the band themselves. A very special and exclusive cover version, which has been done especially tonight by a prominent Australian act for the J-Files. Melissa is with us. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, how are you going?
Not too bad. You've been a fan for a long, long time?
Yes, from the early 80s.
What was the moment that got you hooked onto the music of Morrissey?
That's hard to say, actually. I mean, I loved all his music in the early 80s, and I actually was a fan of Wham and Spandau Ballet. But I actually really liked
Did I offend you? Hang on. Did I offend you before?
No. You actually made me ring up and speak to you.
So I know. I wasn't saying Wham were bad. I was just saying there were bands like Wham and A-ha, you know, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah. No, exactly. But I loved all that as well because I was 16 and it was fun. But I also like Morrissey's Mind. And I like The Cure and The Cult and, you know, I actually like a lot of different kinds of music.
Okay, I'm going to test you. This isn't a Smiths lyric. This is actually one of Morrissey's most prominent lyrics. I want to see how much of a fan you are, okay? See if you can guess this track. From the lyric, which has always been one of my favourite lyrics of Morrissey's.
Yep.
Beware, I bear more grudges than lonely high court judges.
Oh, I'm not sure if I know that. Sorry.
Oh! Here it is for you anyway.
Thank you.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. It's a classic. Anyway, thanks so much. See you, Melissa.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
closer I get, you're wasting your time. The more you ignore me, the closer I get, you're wasting your time. I will be in the bar.
This week on doublej.net.au.
We're celebrating the career of Morrissey prior to his visit to Australia. Read about his musical beginnings and the things he hates in our J-Files feature article. The art of making a very long album is a tough one to get right. Dan Condon writes about some of the best records that are worth a couple of hours of your time. And Tim Scheel pours through what Björk played in a recent DJ set for an insight into her genius.
Check out all these articles and more, plus stream the week's shows on doublej.net.au.
Well, I think the way you feel as a teenager stays with you forever. I really believe that. And we try to change and we hope that we'll change, but we don't really in big ways and serious ways. I think the personality is formed at that time, for the good and for the bad. We all want to grow up and move on and appear to be different to people, and we want people to see us in a different way. But I don't know, I think the personality is very, very strongly cemented, and you know, we just bear whatever shortcomings we have and learn to live with it.
Well, I'm afraid it doesn't make me smile. I wish I could laugh.
The J Files on Double J.
But that joke isn't funny anymore.
And Richard Kingsmore with you on Double J. Still to come, some more live music of Morrissey as we gear towards his tour of next week. Also, we'll talk a little bit about his autobiography, which came out a couple of years ago. If you have actually read his autobiography, let us know. 0408 345555. Text in. Let us know. I'd love to know your thoughts on it. And also that exclusive cover version of a Morrissey classic coming up right after this. Let's go back once again to one of his early singles, this one written about the Cray brothers, who were gangsters on the London scene in the 60s.
Dear hero imprisoned with all the new crimes that you are perfecting. Oh, I can't help quoting you, 'cause everything that you said rings true.
On Double J tonight, the single sleeve actually featured a picture of Morrissey at the age of 7, up a tree, playing. It just got so confusing in the early stages of Morrissey's career as well, because do you know that basically all the Smiths, except for Johnny Marr, play on that track, the last of the famous International Playboys. So this is a couple of years after the end of the Smiths, 1989. Andy Rourke, Mike Joyce and Craig Gannon, who played with him for a while, are all playing with Morrissey on that track. It got very, very messy. Got even messier later on that decade too. All right, Richard Kingsmore with you on Double J. The cover that we've got tonight, an exclusive cover on Double J for the Morrissey J Files. And we basically got a huge Morrissey fan in Jess Cornelius, who is the person behind the Melbourne act Teeth and Tongue. Teeth and Tongue have just recently put out their third album. But Jess Cornelius here talks about her liking of Morrissey's music.
He's got this such a darkness, but he's so funny that you don't get really bummed out. Some people are like, oh, the Smiths are so depressing. But it's like, but it's hilarious. You know, there are some people that write depressing lyrics and they're not funny, you know, which would you choose?
Let it be known, a dreaming hotel. We just had a quarrel. I sent you away.
I'm trying to imagine what Morrissey would be like as a person. I imagine he is very opinionated. I think one of the things that's made Morrissey, or given Morrissey such longevity in his career, is the fact that he does have such interesting lyrics and he is so sort of forthright in his opinions, and he just says what he thinks, and he says what he thinks in his songs, and he says what he thinks in public as well.
Say, would you let me cry on your shoulder? I've heard that you try anything twice.
I think that's really interesting to people. You know, he doesn't sort of seem to have the same kind of filters that some other artists do, and he doesn't seem to be particularly worried about what other people are thinking or what the trend is, because the lyrics are so interesting, and he's obviously, you know, a great songwriter and musically as well, but it's timeless, you know, it transcends all the trends and the fashions and things like that, because people still love hearing from people who, I guess, have something to say and who maybe, you know, you don't always agree with their opinions, but it's a new viewpoint on things. You know, he was, I guess, and is a voice for a lot of people that didn't have anybody else who was saying the things that they were feeling. With the There's a Light That Never Goes Out, there was just this beautiful kind of hypnotic, relentless drum beat that we could use to play around with a little bit. We've done quite a stripped back version. We've still got drums and we've got a bit of a synthy thing, and but it's also the song that gets stuck in my head the most, I think. The Take Me Out Tonight, you know, that's a pretty iconic line.
Double J tonight. How cool is that? An exclusive cover of There Is a Light That Never Goes Out, done by Jess Cornelius as Melbourne act, Teeth and Tongue, done exclusively for the J-Files here at Double J tonight. If you want to actually see that performance, the video is up now at doublej.net.au. You can also right there, right now, read a cracking long-form article written by Dan Condon here at Double J all about Morrissey's career. So doublej.net.au. Richard Kingsmore with you tonight on Double J. Maisha joins us right now. Hey, how are you?
Hi, good, thanks.
You're going to go see Morrissey next week. We'll talk about that in a moment. You've got to tell me about how his music was introduced to you. That sounds so cool.
So I was in school, year 10, and I had a really cool English teacher who has, you know, fantastic taste in music, and he suggested that I check out The Smiths. So I went ahead and looked them up, and obviously the first song that comes up, you know, is There's a Light That Never Goes Out, which was a fantastic cover, by the way, just then. So I sort of went from there, checked out all his solo stuff, and now I'm a lifelong Morrissey devotee.
Wow. Well, yeah. You got to give a shout-out to the teachers. Who was the teacher? What was his name?
Paul Pesnow from Norwood Morialda High School, you're the man.
A very cool Year 10 English teacher to introduce you to the music of Morrissey and the Smiths. That's really great. So what do you expect? Have you seen Morrissey on stage before?
Yeah, I went to his 2012 tour, so I went to the Melbourne show.
How was it?
Oh, it was fantastic. I was just a few weeks shy of being 18, so I had to, you know, sit up really far away in the unlicensed area. But the set list was fantastic, really good combination of Smith's material as well as solo stuff. And when everyone sort of sang along to Please Let Me Get What I Want, it was just, you know, the most beautiful thing.
Mm. So you got tickets to Vivid Live. You're going to see him. Which night next week are you going?
I'm going on the Saturday.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah, I'm really lucky with the ballot.
And what do you think? What's he going to do this time round? Is it going to be the same show? Do you think? Are you expecting something different?
I'm expecting lots of stuff from World Peace Is None of Your Business, and as a result, maybe not that much Smith material. But then, you know, the last record was so quintessentially Morrissey's. You know, I don't have any complaints if there's, you know. That's the entire set list.
He has been doing a lot of it since the end of last year. Of course, yeah. He's had the illness as well in the last 18 months or so. He's been hit a couple of times with, you know, what appears to be, you know, not unserious health concerns. So it'll be interesting to see whether he looks any different on stage, whether he looks a little bit, you know, frailer. But he's been working hard this year. But as you said, a lot of the record of last year has been in his set
Absolutely.
List.
Yeah. And he did mention recently that he had underwent treatment for cancer. So that gave me a, you know, a right scare.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, everyone in London, when he came back and did a big performance at the end of last year, everyone was thinking that could be a, you know, a bit of a swan song for him. But that was 6 months ago and he's been doing lots of performances since then. So the guy is still, you know, touring. He seems to have the energy. So
yeah,
hopefully
he's a warrior.
He's a warrior. Hopefully everything's still fine with him. Anyway, let's hear some live music. Thanks for that, Maisha. Enjoy the concert next week as well.
Thank you.
On the Morrissey J-Files, this is Morrissey Live in Action in 2004.
Thank you for coming here. Thank you for being you.
Why did you give me so much desire when there is nowhere I can go to offload this desire? And why did you give me so much love
J-Files.
I mean, lots of people ask me, you know, now that I live in London, have I forsaken Manchester? But I feel that I shouldn't really have to make a choice. I like both places. I think they both have their good points, so whenever I get pangs of nostalgia, I can just zip to Manchester and stay there for a while, but it doesn't happen often. I'm very aware of the history, the musical history of Manchester. I think lots of people should be terribly proud of it. And it's just really very pleasing to contribute something to it and be a part of it. It's just a great endless thrill. And although many people who have sprouted from Manchester, who I wouldn't perhaps feel a kinship with, I'm just really quite proud that the city has been so productive anyway.
The J-Files. Join in on Facebook and Twitter. Hashtag J-Files.
The J-Files.
Hi, this is Leah. I'm from Perth. I remember finding a tape, and I'd heard of the Smiths, but I didn't really know who they were, and I started listening to it. And I loved the humour, and it made me laugh, but there's a darkness to it that I really connected with, as most kind of late teens, they're all angsty. I certainly had a lot of that going on, so yeah, I really connected with that. And the music is... it fills your whole head and body, and it's great to dance to, and it's great to just chill out and listen to as well.
The boy with the thorn in his side, behind the hatred there lies a murderous desire.
So my best friend Sean and I camped out all night to get Smith's tickets. It was freezing, it was in the middle of winter. We had our sleeping bags there, and we, you know, chatted with other people in the line, and we were just so excited. So we got our tickets, and we waited, and we waited, and we waited, and then finally it was getting close to the date, and I think Morrissey was sick, and they had to can the Perth date, and we were just so devastated. We were really upset. Actually, I knew a girl who won the competition through Triple J to meet Morrissey. And I was so jealous of her. And then when it got canned, she said, oh, I'll never listen to his music again. Or I'll never listen to the Smiths either. And I thought, well, you never were a real Smiths fan, so I really should have won that. I'd like to request Shakespeare's Sister. It's got one of the best opening lines of many, many Smith songs with amazing opening lines. But that one just reminds me of my best friend, Sean. We used to drive around in his little Honda Civic all hours of the day and night with the Smiths and Morrissey blaring out the windows. And so it goes out to him.
The J-Files. And a special request tonight for Leah in Perth. Great story too, Leah. Thanks for that. The Smiths with Shakespeare's Sister. And I played before that, and quite a few people actually got on the text line and pointed it out as well. A track from Morrissey's 1992 record, Your Arsenal, a very important and perhaps his first great record. No, Viva Hate was great as well. But Your Arsenal had that track, You're Gonna Need Someone on Your Side. And a few people went, you know what? Sounds a lot like Arctic Monkeys do now. And I reckon there is a bit of comparison for sure. That sort of heavy rockabilly sound. Kingsmore with you tonight on Double J. This is the Morrissey J Files. A few more lyrics which people have pointed out from Morrissey's huge catalogue of lyric writing as being some of their favourites. Craig pinpointed one. I was looking for a job and then I found a job and heaven knows I'm miserable now. And also Ant got in touch and said, this is a great one as well, writing frightening verse to a buck-toothed girl from Luxembourg. Who else but Morrissey could do that? Steph, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
You've read the autobiography. That's great.
I have read it, yeah. I found it to be a cracking read, but I love Morrissey's lyrics, I suppose. He writes long form a lot like he writes lyrics. It's very playful and smart by one turn, and then look, the part where he's going through the court proceedings with the Smiths is kind of interminable.
I've been flicking through it the last few weeks. I must admit, I kind of felt like, oh, I'm going to sort of jump around here because there's so many bits of his career I'm really interested in, and I kind of hit upon the court case and his description of the judge and the world in which the judge comes from and how the judge is treating him. It's so Morrissey, isn't it?
It is so Morrissey. He's a very prickly man and he's very hard to love, but I think that's kind of the charm. I particularly loved the stuff about his early childhood, you know, hanging out at the Manchester Trade Hall with Buzzcocks and a certain ratio and feeling like he'd found people of his own species.
Yeah, it would have been a very exciting time. Listen, just sit tight, hang in there for a second, have a listen to this. This is the guy. This is a bit of Franz Ferdinand speaking on Double J. This is Alex and Paul. Alex hasn't read the autobiography, but Paul from Franz Ferdinand has. You'll hear their conversation about what they thought of the autobiography.
How is it?
It's good. I've just got to the court case, and
is that where it starts getting a bit boring?
I've never sort of really felt the need, you know, some people like John Waters, for instance, he'll go along to like court cases and just like watch. But I've never really sort of had that desire, the desire to do that. So,
but he goes to criminal court cases, which are a lot more exciting than a couple of business partners suing each other for a bad contract, which is what it was essentially.
So much like I wouldn't actually go along to a court case and want to witness that. I'd far less want to read about it. So I think I might, if you don't mind, Mozza, I might just skim that little bit.
How could you? It's a piece of literature. It's a Penguin classic.
It's a Penguin classic. It's true.
It's literature.
I'd rather just read about him bitching off about people, to be honest.
Oh, is he quite bitchy in the book?
Oh, yeah.
Like, no way. I don't believe it.
I mean, pretty much everybody gets a tongue lashing.
Is there anybody he doesn't bitch about? Is there anybody he just bigs up?
His mum.
Oh, yeah, he loves his mum.
In fact, all his family, he's a family man.
Yeah.
So there you have it. That's Alex and Paul from Franz Ferdinand talking about the autobiography. The Jeff Travis bit from Rough Trade as well, how he has to deal with Jeff, who runs Rough Trade Records.
I thought it was so interesting that, you know, the whole story of Rough Trade signing the Smiths, and by Morrissey's explanation, had it not been for that signing, that Rough Trade would have sort of flickered into a quiet death.
Well, that's very true. Tony Wilson from Factory Records, I interviewed him a few times and he said the same thing. He said it kept the wheels moving on the English music scene, because if that hadn't have happened, Rough Trade would have gone under and it would have just been a domino effect. So it was a pretty
important... Thank God it didn't.
Yeah. But also there's that part in the book about How Soon Is Now, where Jeff Travis is sitting behind his desk and Morrissey is leaping up flight after flight to get to his office to play him the track, which is the Smiths' How Soon Is Now. They've just finished it in the studio with John Porter, and he's so excited by it. And Jeff Travis is there listening to it and goes, "What is this mess? What's Johnny doing? He's just playing noise." And it came out as a B-side initially, that track.
Criminal.
Unbelievable. Anyway, good to chat to you, Steph. Keep enjoying. There's not much longer of the J-Files to go, but the autobiography, yes, it is a Penguin classic. That's the other great thing. He specified it had to come out as a Penguin classic, his autobiography, and that it did. But thanks for getting...
One way to make the bestsellers list.
Yes, of course, and that it did. Thanks so much for getting in touch, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Richard.
See you, Steph. All right, on Double J, on the J-Files. I've got to fit in as much of this as I can. This is, I mean, Morrissey was huge on the glam scene. We mentioned before the New York Dolls. He was a major fan of theirs. He was into T-Rex like you wouldn't believe. But also there was a band like Roxy Music who in the early 70s did a lot of music just like this, really experimental art rock. And I reckon Roxy Music were a bit of an influence on this track. It comes from his 1995 album. It is the opening track to Southpaw Grammar on Double J. J-Files, it's such a wonderful piece. That's about halfway through. Can't squeeze it all in, but you've got to listen to it if you haven't already. The Teachers Are Afraid of the Pupils, the opening track to his 95 album, Southpaw Grammar, on the J-Files on Double J.
The J-Files.
People who are fairly strong on spotting accents will doubtless realise that somewhere in you is quite a bit of Irish.
Yes.
Let's just talk about the roots for a moment and what they mean to you, if they mean anything much at all.
Yes, my parents come from Dublin. In fact, all members of the group have Irish roots, as it were, which has found us great favour over there because of that, and the music, of course. But yes, I mean, I'm quite proud of that also. There were lots of young people in the family, and they were very aware of music, you know, teenagers, so that I benefited a great deal from that because I got lots of music exposed to me.
The J-Files.
Kirsty McColl is actually on backing vocals on that track, a 1989 single for Morrissey, Interesting Drug. I want to talk a little bit about Kirsty McColl in just a moment, but we touched on How Soon Is Now. Can you believe it? In 1984, the initial release of the track, it was a B-side. Rough Trade Records didn't think it was worthy of an A-side release. Right now, on the J-Files on Double J, here is Craig Shufton, culture author and guru, talking about the significance of this song.
This is a song that's been described as the stairway to heaven of the 1980s. That's a lot for a song to live up to, but this one has survived far worse treatment since it first appeared on the Smiths' Hatful of Hollow album in 1984. It's certainly built to last. How Soon Is Now is a towering wall of sound, and it features some of Johnny Marr's most inventive guitar playing. But its foundation is a beat constructed by blues guitarist Bo Diddley in 1955. For his breakthrough single, simply called Bo Diddley, Bo fused an African rhythm with the chugging sound of a train engine to create one of the most famous rhythms in rock and roll. Since then, a lot of people have hitched their wagons to this shuffling beat. Rolling Stones, Irish rock stars, 80s pop pranksters, and Australian TV soap actors looking for a career in the music industry. Morrissey and Marr took this sound and slowed it down to a crawl. The desire Bo Diddley put into his song was still there, but also a kind of hopelessness you'd never hear in the Rolling Stones, let alone Craig McLaughlin or Bow Wow Wow. Writing about Morrissey in 1988, Simon Reynolds compared the Smiths to some of their predecessors. The Rolling Stones were all about satisfying your desires, getting what you want, love, respect, action and cheap thrills. But by the 1980s, desire in pop had started to mean something quite different. It was a decade of power dressing, self-help gurus and exercise videos. Getting what you want had become an industry, and pop music was just a small part of a general mania for achievement and self-improvement. In the hands of groups like Duran Duran, Heaven 17 and ABC, the Rolling Stones' monologue of desire had become a lifestyle wish list. That's why it was so important for Morrissey to be miserable and to want to stay that way. His desires could never be satisfied, so the Smiths' music could never be easily digested by 80s style culture. Not that people didn't try. Peppy Jeans ran a TV ad campaign in the UK in the late 80s, which used the instrumental track of How Soon Is Now. The ad picked up on the Smiths' love of early rock and roll to communicate a feeling of rebellion and independence. But the company stopped short of using any of Morrissey's lyrics, figuring that a tale of suicidal depression following a trip to a gay nightclub would probably not help sell jeans to their target audience.
The J-Files on Double J.
There you have it, Craig Shufton, looking at the significance of How Soon Is Now by the Smiths. The fact that the TV series Charmed also used it in their opening credits for nearly a decade certainly prolonged the life of the Smiths and that song. All right, we're getting close to the end. I want to play this one for Kirsty MacColl because reading the autobiography of Morrissey, there is one person that he doesn't say one bad word about, and that is Kirsty MacColl, who was the English singer who tragically died in the year 2000. And in the book he says, "Life is a pigsty." And that is the name of this song. Such a beautiful moment, isn't it? Life is a pigsty. Morrissey there from his 2006 album, Ringleader of the Tormentors, an album which he actually worked with Tony Visconti on. Tony Visconti of Bowie and T-Rex fame produced the record, and Tony Visconti, who's produced a lot of records, says that this is one of the best albums he's ever worked on. Thanks to everyone who got in touch tonight on the J-Files. Melissa says, how good is it hearing Morrissey's voice on the radio? Amy says, I'm in tears. Morrissey is only coming to Sydney. I'll never get to see the man who saved my life. Lloyd, thanks. You said awesome listening tonight. Also, someone said, I've been down and to catch the show is so uplifting. I thought no one related to Morrissey these days. There is always a place for a poet. Needless to say, it's been a thrill to be back on the J-Files. Richard Kingsmore with you, but a big thanks to the J-Files team of Chloe Lake, Dan Bahaja, Mike Williams, Sam Lee, and also make sure you read the terrific long-form article, which is on the Double J website, written by Dan Condon. Go to doublej.net.au. You can stream the show. You can also sign up to the podcast, and you can watch that brilliant performance by Teeth and Tongue, an exclusive for tonight's show. Next week on the J-Files, we're going to look at a guy who's only put out three albums, but God, he's made a mark. His live performance is unsurpassed. Dan Sultan, a wonderful collaborator, great performer, great storyteller. He's going to be the subject of the J-Files next week on Double J, Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Thanks once again for listening. If you are seeing Mozza next week, enjoy it. Double J.
The J-Files.